Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah, so anyway, I then put all my money offshore and the tax man's not found. Oh, Facebook Live's on! oh, whoops, what happened there? Okay, so in a couple of seconds...
Hello, Egg Chasers! This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously.
I forgot, I couldn't fade it out, Tim. Sorry, continue.
It's quite all right. The podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, and we know how hard this post-season into new season barren wasteland is, and that is why we're here for you with another podcast. No summer holiday for us.
Zero.
No break. No letting up. There's still some rugby to talk about. Plenty of rugby to preview ahead of the new season and some stories that are doing the rounds. Do you know what the only bit of actual rugby was this whole weekend?
Well, I mean, I've got a preview on a championship club if you want to hear about it.
Oh, there are some pre-season games. In terms of competitive rugby matches...
Ooh, competitive rugby matches.
I think I'm right in saying in the whole rugby calendar, this is the only one without top-level rugby.
Is that right?
Really? In the whole year,
of the 52? Wow.
South Africa Schools beat Wales Schools... 43-40.
France were playing England under-18s. France won.
France won comfortably. They were 31-0 up after half an hour.
There you go. So that's where we've had to dip to, under-18 rugby. however, yeah, pre-season has started, so we'll get into that in a little bit. You've already heard JB right there.
Hello.
Wearing his lovely New York Jets pyjama
trousers. I'm in my pyjamas.
Phil in a Canberra Raiders vest.
Go Raiders.
How do you say that Chinese sponsor of theirs?
Haihui.
Huawei.
I say Huawei.
Huawei.
They're the people that harvest all your data and send it back to Beijing.
Yeah.
For analysis.
Yeah.
Good on them.
Started strong. Right, you know where you can find us. Where shall we start? Because like we say, there's in terms of rugby, there's not a lot to dissect.
Well, there is a very important game today. I'm feeling rather good about it. Manchester, a club that you played for, actually, Tim.
I did.
Are playing their pre-season against Didsbury Tok H today.
Are you in the same league now?
No, they have gone up two leagues. So we were in the same league. They were. So the story of Manchester is quite sad, actually, because you
it
were
is.
There,
it really
you?
Is. It's the second oldest rugby club in the whole of England.
Do you buy that?
Behind Blackheath.
I know so many clubs that claim to be the oldest. Like, I think Preston Grasshoppers would have something to say about that. And I think LSH would definitely have something to say about that. Like, it's unclear who is the oldest club to me.
Blackheath are... the oldest.
Is that definite?
Yeah, I think that's recognised. Their nickname is The Club.
So, then there's someone like Broughton Park who had their centenary in one quarter.
125 right? years.
Plus another 8 years, because that was during the South Africa Lions tour. So, give that another 9 years. So, I mean, they're 134 years old. So I don't buy it when all these clubs say we are the oldest.
Manchester was founded very, very, very long time ago. It's a very proud club. It was sort of in the championship. It was solid at National One level. It was trying to compete at the championship. Was having to spend money, obviously, because it's semi-professional. And then all of a sudden the guys behind it, who they're sitting on an incredible bit of land, very, very valuable
bit of
land.
It is an amazing bit of land.
And a huge slice of land as well.
Yeah.
But I think the owners of it were more interested in squash and whatever else it is they do there. Hockey.
Yes, yeah, they
pulled the
hobby,
money,
yeah.
And then Manchester. It was quite famous actually. They lost their games by a sort of an aggregate of 110 points.
It was astonishing to watch.
I remember playing against them that year. So they had a season. It was when the leagues got restructured.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
It was January. So they had quite a strong team. January, they pulled the plug, and so we, as Sedgley Park, 10 miles away, got kind of picked off about half a dozen of their best players into our squad in January. The rest of their paid players all left because they were no longer being paid. So that season they lost the remaining games by about 80 points. The following season they lost every game by between 80 and 100 points.
Playing with kids, basically.
The following season they lost every game by about 80 to 100 points. The following season was about 60 to 80 points. The following season was 40 to 60. And they had like this 6-7 year period of just every single year being absolute rock bottom.
It didn't stop until about level 7, I would say.
Yeah,
level 7 or level 8, and then they finally went up again.
There were genuine concerns for safety. I remember that when they were getting hammered because they were up against practically professional players.
Yeah.
And these were kids, but they were only fulfilling the fixtures, so they didn't get thrown out of the leagues and have to start at the very bottom.
Do you know what? They would have saved themselves 4 years. I mean, they would have. They'd have gone down and they'd have come back up again. That's what Oral did. I'm not saying Oral are in a great position now, but it would have saved them a lot of time.
And you had this position where they brought in a load of paid players over a few years. So the talented youth ended up not breaking into the first team and playing second team. So the talented ones kind of left to go to other clubs. So that when this paid players stopped, there was no kind of decent replacements for them.
It's a good lesson about the. Kind of a good story of modern rugby that rugby clubs that are based around that sense of community and not having to pay players to be there are going to succeed. There's another club in Manchester that are very well at their level, not at a high level, but Burnage. They compete at a good level, but they look after their guys rather than paying them.
Give
you jugs of beer, give you a nice feed after training, and we'll make you feel loved in that way.
Wharfdale, he were in Sedgley's league for a little while.
Wharfdale were famously in National One for, I think, the longest period of time.
This is Northern Rugby Chat.
Northern Rugby Chat.
It's all applicable to rugby across the board.
Exactly.
Wharfdale were for 50 plus years. I'm probably wrong on the exact duration, but it was an enormous amount of time.
I used to play against Wharfdale for Newbury.
And this is according to a coach in their league. I'm trying to think who it is. It might have been the old Macclesfield coach. But they were saying that they don't pay players, which, if that is true, is astonishing.
Yeah, because I know they had, when I played,
they always had a couple of Fijians.
Yeah,
didn't they?
They had a few Samoans and Tongans and Fijians, so they paid players.
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, that was the claim.
But
so they had a lot of local guys. Yeah, that, like with their farmer strength.
They had a lot of local guys, and it was a great club to go to. In exactly as you mentioned before, the spirit of rugby. Mm. So it was kind of the town would turn out. It's a beautiful part of the world, beautiful place to go. And it feels like a town club.
I tell you a game to go to if unlike, unfortunately, like me, you get dragged up to the lakes occasionally, kicking and screaming, and it happens to be a Saturday. Try and get yourself down to Kendal Rugby Club. So
Kendal's great.
Playing Kirby Lonsdale is a tremendous game. I'm sure they've got something like 3,000 there. Well, I mean, that again was like level 6 or level 7.
Well, Kendal used to be a decent team.
Yeah,
they used to be National League.
They're big boys. I've had some hidings against Kendal.
So what great rivalries are there at local levels? That'd be a good one. I'd love to know about that. There must be some sort of amateur level.
Well, it depends, isn't it? Because obviously the teams bounce up and down so much. But one which I kind of think of would be Carmarthen Quins, Carmarthen Athletic back in the day. That's a pretty good one. I'm sure there's loads in Wales. Around here, it was always Broughton Park versus Sale FC, but then Sale FC absolutely tanked, and now they are where they are. So in fact, Sale FC were playing Sale Jets last night.
Yeah. Thinking geographically, Sedgley, there's always kind of the five clubs or so in the northwest. So Sedgley, Mac, Fylde, Manchester historically, Preston, Grasshoppers, and Caldy, Waterloo. But the clubs that I've played against, so down in the southwest, you always had Redruth and Launceston, which is the two Cornish clubs.
Which then became Cornish All Blacks and...
Yeah, Cornish All Blacks.
And
that's a terrible name, isn't it? Cornish All Blacks.
And the Pirates.
No, Redruth and... Yeah, Pirates are separate to those two clubs.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right.
So they... I assume that those two had quite a strong rivalry because they're historically in the same league for a long period of time.
And Exeter and Plymouth must have done. But again, they're not amateur level now, but yeah, back in way back.
The opposite end of the country, the northeast, Bladen and Tynedale,
for
a long period of time have been in the same leagues.
Oh, Darlington
and Moton Park.
Yeah,
Moton Park
the Darlington. Two Darlingtons.
Because they were in the same league when I played at Darlington for my one game.
When you went to Richmond,
wrong Richmond.
It is. You mentioned that last week. I've been to Richmond, North Yorkshire. It's a beautiful little market town.
It's dreadful, mate. It's dreadful.
It's beautiful for an afternoon.
A Saturday afternoon,
a few beers at Yarm and Richmond.
Yeah,
there.
But it's
lovely.
Strictly not beautiful if you signed your contract of employment and thought you were going to Richmond, North London, West London, even, and you end up. In Richmond, North Yorkshire.
Yeah.
That is literally the worst. This is the one thing we didn't want to happen.
Right. World Rugby have got five players that they are inducting into their Hall of Fame.
Any from Bladen?
No. Number 138, Stephen Larkham.
Perfect.
Larkers.
All right with that?
Spot on.
Yeah.
Couldn't think of a better candidate.
Previous 138.
Oh, well, no, because you've got to have, I think, 5 years not playing or more than that before you're eligible.
Yeah, but he is the 138th, so that...
Yeah.
That feels about right.
I can't think of a better Aussie fly half than him, unless I'm mistaken.
I can't think of a player who managed to be a top-class international player despite looking like an amateur player.
Well, how about this?
Wearing those baggy shirts that they used to wear, and him with his, skinny legs.
Well, how about this? How about being a top-class fly half and not kicking?
Yeah, John Eales was doing some of the kicking during the start of his career. And Matt Gitto and Elton Flatley.
Everyone but him,
yeah. But what a partnership he had.
Actually, I say 5 years. I mean, obviously, he wasn't playing 5 years ago. So it must have been... He must have retired like 10 years, 12 years ago now.
Getting on for, surely, yeah.
According to this, he finished playing for Australia in 2007. And then had 3 years at the Rico Black Rams. So 8 years ago, he finished playing.
Oh, there you go.
He is 44.
I'll come to number 139 in a second. Number 140, Pierre Villepreux.
Yeah, the obvious choice.
Villepreux. I'm not aware of him.
No, neither.
Number 141. I did a double take on this because I went. It was Brian Williams, but I initially just saw Bryn Williams, a friend of the pod.
He's going to make it at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he looks like he stopped playing 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's only been 2 years, but it's been a tough 2 years.
Hi, Bryn. Number 142, Lisa Burgess. But number 139, Ronan O'Gara. Discuss Ronan O'Gara in the World Rugby Hall of Fame. I think this is the earliest that he could have been inducted, as you say, 5 years retired.
I mean, so I've noticed a lot of Ronan O'Gara love last few weeks. Mainly from certain journalists. I mean, they've really gone heavy on the Ronan O'Gara stuff, which is fine. He's definitely doing some exciting stuff. Is it linked to this, I wonder? Is this why is all...
I think the reason he's been in the press has been Crusaders.
Okay. But you don't think it was all linked to this Hall of Fame thing?
I don't think so. I wouldn't have... It seemed weird to specifically target someone who's just... been assistant coach for the Super Rugby winning team, not because of their performance of the Super Rugby winning team, but because they're a couple of weeks away from being inducted into a nominal Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
No, I'm not saying that Ronan O'Gara doesn't deserve to be in. That's not what I'm saying. I'm wondering whether they have to spread it around the countries a little bit. Because...
Oh, I'd say they have to, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess so, because there's a lot of amazing players won World Cups who haven't been inducted.
Yeah, but is winning the World Cup really... I mean, this is the chat they have in NFL all the time. Who gets included and why? But let's just say you made a list of fly halves who were playing at the time that Ronan O'Gara was playing. And who was like the naturally better fly half? Was it Ronan O'Gara or was it Nick Evans? Well, Nick Evans isn't going to get in, even though you could argue he might be a better fly half, because he hasn't achieved as much. And it's all about achievements, I think. And Ronan O'Gara has achieved a lot. And also, you know, the argument I made about Sam Warburton being great, but maybe not great, is he never did anything at club level. Whereas Ronan O'Gara did do a lot at club level. In fact, he was amazing at club level.
He'd done everything at club level.
Yeah.
So, and he's done a lot. So, for me, with Ronan O'Gara, my first reaction is remembering his last couple of years for Ireland, where he kind of faded out hugely in the shadow of Johnny Sexton, who was coming through, and the 2009 Lions. But when you look back, when you put those out of your mind and you look back, so he's a 3-time Lions tourist, he's Six Nation winner, Grand Slam winner, he won the Champions Cup or the Heineken Cup twice, Pro 14 3 times.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's undeniable, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's simply undeniable. And a fly half too, I mean, that's such a... It's not as if he was playing on the wing. He actually guided these teams to those competitions.
He's one of the top appearance makers of all time in the Heineken Cup. One of the top point scorers in both the Pro 14 and Heineken Cup and Six Nations. So I think my first reaction is probably similar to yours, Tim, but when you kind of ignore the 2009 Lions fiasco...
Oh, my God. He's never been on the field for that.
He definitely deserves to be there.
Well, and don't get me wrong, outstanding player, achieved a lot, as you say. I'm just looking at the names in the Hall of Fame and wondering if...
Well, read the Northern Hemisphere ones rather than the Southern Hemisphere ones, because I do struggle to compare them, really.
Pierre Villeproux.
Gavin Hastings.
How many Heineken Cups does Gavin Hastings win?
Oh, he played in about three or four Lions
joke.
Tours.
One.
Yeah. So there's only two other Irish players in the modern era, and this is maybe what I think is potentially going on. Can you guess who they are?
Paul O'Connell. Bod's not been retired 5 years.
Well, maybe it's not. That's not the
maybe
rule.
Maybe it's
word.
Not the. Yeah.
But yeah, Bod is in.
Got to be Paul O'Connell.
There's one other Irishman who's. Well, he's
Keith
only
Wood?
Just retired, so no. Keith Wood, correct.
Oh, yeah.
They're the only two other Irishmen.
You know what? I think that's the other thing as well you've got to consider about Ronan O'Gara, is you can't really compare him to, like, a Gavin Hastings or a Guscott or someone like that, because...
Or Ian Evans, JPR Williams...
Yeah, they're just not comparable, because they were... You know, JPR was a notoriously bad dentist or something at the time. You know, and you've got Ronan O'Gara training full-time with a full schedule of professional games, and I think that's the big difference. And to me, like, the guys who earn it in the professional era are much more worthy, and furthermore, the guys
what?
That earn it... Yeah, absolutely. And the guys that earn it via the club route rather than just a handful of international games a year, to me, it's hands down. So, yeah, I definitely think it's a good selection, actually.
Okay. I don't mind it. I think in the context of there's only two other Irishmen in the modern era...
Oh, sorry. Someone... Rob Diamond's just popped up on Facebook Live saying, the Butcher of Bridgend, because he was a surgeon. JPL Williams.
But there's Lawrence Dallaglio, Johnny Wilkinson, Jerry Guscott, I'm just looking for modern names, Brian O'Driscoll, Fabian Palouse, Felipe Contepomi, Stephen Larkham. So, in terms of Irishmen,
yeah.
100%.
I think
in terms of compared to all the players that have ever played rugby, I think there's others that I would have in there.
Do you know what?
First.
I would segment the Hall of Fame. I would say pre-professional, maybe even like transition, because that's really hard to decide, you know, who was professional, who was amateur. Although, you know,
we can understand context. Everyone's
I can't.
Competing with the people. No, but you don't go, oh, JPR Williams wouldn't have got in the Wales team now. You don't do it like that, because the context was the players he was playing against.
Yeah, maybe. But like, I read the Tom English book, The Grudge, and I recommend everyone read this book. It's so well written, so well researched. And I thought, God, I can't wait to watch this game. So I bought it up on YouTube. It was unwatchable. It was simply... you can't make heads or tails of what's going
on.
Yeah,
but that's judging... That's like those Manchester... We live in Manchester, so...
It was like
watching. That's why I'm using the note. That's like those Manchester students painting over the Rudyard Kipling If poem in the Manchester Students' Union.
Doesn't compute.
Those social justice warriors, because they were judging... the standards of 120 years ago compared to with today's standards.
The nearest sporting event I can think of, which looks like old style rugby. Have you ever typed in group MMA?
That sounds like a subcategory on an adult team exotic website.
If you watch Russian team MMA,
I've seen some of this. Yeah.
It looks very similar to
5-on-5 MMA.
Yeah, yeah. Tag in and tag out, or just all
no. It's just an all out brawl, and it's very similar to team. Sorry, it's very, very similar to 80s rugby or 70s rugby.
Oh, that sounds great.
Almost indistinguishable.
What I would compare it to, because I certainly used to be a bit of a gamer, is you have nostalgic feelings for a game that you played as a kid. Sonic or
Lomu
like
Rugby.
Mario 64, Lomu Rugby, something like that. And then you pick it up 15 years later and you're like, God, this is almost unplayable. The graphics are so blocky and awful and the gameplay is just clunky and... So, it's kind of a bit like that.
That's all right, JB.
Everything's okay.
Quick technical check.
I thought I'd buzz.
So that's Hall of Fame.
Nelson Mandela's in the World Rugby Hall of Fame.
Yeah, what position did he play then?
Is that, I don't know.
Was that the winger for the Sharks?
Other world leaders have been rugby players. George Bush played at university.
He did? Yeah. Was he a flanker?
I don't know. Gordon Brown was a flanker. He was a.
He lost his eye playing rugby. I mean, that's true. That's true commitment. Hey, he's a blindside. Very good.
That wasn't a joke. And what a blindside, isn't it?
How did I not see that coming?
I can't help but feel that in bad taste.
No, I think it's good.
I didn't mean it like that. I thought he genuinely was.
He was a flanker. I think he was a flanker.
He strikes me as a blindside. And
I think John Prescott. He's definitely a boxer. He must have played rugby league. He's from hell.
Rugby league, 100%.
And we've seen Boris Johnson playing rugby as well against Japanese school children.
Yeah.
Any more people in the Hall of Fame? Is that it?
There's 137 others before this.
No, just this induction, sorry.
Oh, this induction. No, the five names I gave you was the one. They do five a year.
So they've only been inducting people since 2006.
Yeah.
And it tends to be... It started off a couple per year. I mean, rugby school was the second inductee. Even though that's not a person, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I don't think it's a person.
Yeah, and Melrose Rugby Club got inducted as well. And it's some odd selection. So, alongside Willie John McBride, the 1888 New Zealand rugby team got inducted.
So,
entire team.
Could we make a 15 out of inductions of the Hall of Fame that simply couldn't take the field? Melrose Rugby Club.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela.
More because he's rather than because he's not alive anymore, because he's.
No, he just couldn't play.
He couldn't play rugby. No,
he's not a rugby player.
Barbarians FC, Cardiff RFC.
All right, this is ridiculous. Now stop reading. I've had enough.
The 1920 and 1924 US Olympic rugby team, the 1924 Romanian Olympic rugby team.
Right, if you can't put them into a 15, they don't count.
If they wanted an Irish inductee to the World Rugby Hall of Fame, Blair Paddy Maine. He's not in.
Yeah. Is he Irish?
Founding member of the SAS. No, it was Northern Irish. Founding member of the SAS. Lions tourist. Irish international.
That's what I'm
talking
about.
Fought in the war. Absolute hero of a man. Get him in there.
Excellent.
Rugby championship starts next week.
Yes.
Someone tried to say to Michael Checker, Australia are favourites. He laughed it off. Said, nice try.
I didn't know he could laugh.
Before the tournament started,
he only laughs incredibly sarcastically at journalists' comments.
He's apparently ordered lots of waving Japanese cats.
Oh, fantastic!
For the coach room.
Hang on, did they win with the Japanese waving cat?
Yeah.
Who were they beating at the time?
They beat Ireland with a waving Japanese cat.
Ah,
and
yes.
Also, you'll notice, and I want to see if they continue doing this, but Australia clearly have a bit of a deal with a energy drink company, because they have all the different flavours of this one brand of energy drink lined up and never being drunk, but they're just lined up right behind Michael Checker.
Have you ever tried Carabel energy drink?
No, I've not.
It looks awful, doesn't it?
I think all of those energy drinks. So you see, like, 13-year-old kids wandering around with a pint can of Monster.
Yeah.
You're like, And what is going on?
They have that nourishment can thing as well with the ring pull.
Loads of
kids have that.
Some of the hookups between energy drinks and athletes is weird. I mean, I'm not entirely sure why Valentino Rossi needs to be wired on caffeine. In fact, I'd have thought it'd be the other way around. I thought he needs to be very, very calm and in control of his machine. But no. No, he's got to be wild.
Yeah. Well, in the CrossFit place that we go to, Jay, there's some people that take along interesting supplements.
Do they?
Yeah, well, there's little pots on the side, and rage is a word that always appears in it. There was rage something or other.
We had...
Hemo rage.
It wasn't hemo rage, but I remember that one from your Sedgley Park
We had shots of something, and I can't tell you what it was. Shot something, and the guy who got it for us worked in one of these supplements warehouses, and anyway, this stuff got banned. But he had like the final batch, and you'd read the recommended daily allowances, the RDAs. Uh-huh. I mean, 0%, 0%, 0%, 0%, 3,000,000%
yeah,
or something.
I know.
So, right, we'll have some of that. And at half time, we would it was me and this other guy who would take the stuff. Half time, we would look at each other. I was like, "Are you okay, mate?" And Mark, the guy, Mark McConnell, looked back and go, "Mate, I think I want to come down." It was savage.
I remember someone that both of you played with and I played with, I won't name names, I remember him explaining his pre-game energy drink that he was taking. And he was like, "Yeah, it just makes your head go crazy." And I'm like, "Is that what you want before you're about to get on the field?"
That's exactly what I want.
15 people who want to rip your head off.
Yep. Sorry, what were we talking about?
I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, so the Rugby Championship.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think Australia got a real good shout at it. Real good shout. The problem is with Australia. It feels like they rely on a lot of established names, and they have to bring these established names back if they want to compete. Whereas the All Blacks, it just seems like a treadmill of new talent coming through all the time.
Mm.
Like, if you look back 10 years ago, if you look back 5 years ago, the guys that were coming through were probably in the system about 2 years before that. You look back now and you've just got loads and loads of talent flowing through. You think,
New Zealand have got guys haven't made their squad that would get into any other international team.
Australia are scouring the globe trying to bring people back, whereas New Zealand just off you go. Aaron Cruden, off you go. Colin Slade, off you go.
Australia will be without Kurindrani and Karevi, but now we've got Tamua, Kirtley Beale. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting championship. I don't expect to see anything other than New Zealand win. I think it's going to be interesting to see where South Africa really are.
Yeah. Yeah, because England aren't good. I think South Africa will do okay. And they'll carry on building. I mean, they've got the one thing which they haven't had for so long, which is stability.
And
freedom to pick the
team
that they want.
Back. Not Karl Marx. What am I talking about? Malcolm Marx.
Malcolm Marx.
Malcolm Marx, they're taking important. A big political shift. There's another big political shift in South Africa.
Yep.
The little red book is back. No, it's not. Malcolm Marx is back. It'll have a big impact. And a couple of back row players as well, Warren Whiteley.
I think it's just, it's just the ability to pick who they actually want to pick. Hmm. I think that is massive. I'm with you, Tim. I think New Zealand are going to hammer everyone, though.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm going to say it slightly differently. The first games are going to be relatively competitive between New Zealand, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. The second games are going to be absolute hidings.
Mm.
So, I think New Zealand will win everything relatively comfortably.
Okay.
I think Australia have got some talent coming back, but they have also got, there's a load of names in their squad that you just, they're not household names.
Examples?
Jermaine Ainsley.
Oh, yeah.
J-Man, yeah.
Tolu Latu. Brendan Payenga Amosa.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Robertson.
Yeah.
Isaac Rodder.
Yeah, Rodder. Good player. Good cracking player.
Caleb Timu. Luke Antui. Tom Banks. Old Banksy.
Banksy!
Mm. Well, maybe
Jack Maddox.
Yep.
Not a Joe Maddox son.
It's not a legacy
player.
Don't think so.
Well, then in that case,
Sefa Nevalu, Jordan Petia, Joe Powell, Curtis Rona.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, I've heard of Curtis Rona.
they are definitely like turning the soil in Australia, aren't they?
Well, you know, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe they are bringing through, you know, loads of fresh talent, and they're going to be brilliant. I just don't know.
So yeah, there's six uncapped players in the squad, but I've just listed about 12 players who I'm not particularly sure how many of them I could tell you which club they play for or which position they play for.
No idea. Playing.
Interesting.
Argentina will be interesting this year as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Because of the performance of the Jaguares.
So, yes, and I'm fairly certain they are now selecting from European players as well.
Oh, are they?
I think so. Let me just check that. Hard to confirm. I can't see Issa in their squad. Who would be in... And Imhoff is not in there either. But even if it's just the performance of the Jaguares, this was by far their best ever year. They've got amazing away wins in South Africa, Australia and New Zealand, which is quite incredible when you think about it. So I think they'll do all right. So I think they'll be competitive against the other two, against Australia and South Africa.
Were they playing Rugby Championship prior to the World Cup last year? Or was the championship
do a shorter format of the Rugby Championship.
So in 2015 they did. They knocked a game each. Right. They knocked a round off it. But I think Argentina started, I want to say, in 2013 or 2014. Yeah. So they might have had two rounds of Rugby Championship.
The Jaguares started after the last World Cup.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So it was Super Rugby that they added. Yeah. But games get underway, international rugby next weekend. It's New Zealand, Australia and South Africa, Argentina.
So obviously, I should be watching...
Australia and New Zealand.
I should be watching the Rugby Championship because I enjoy the Rugby Championship, but that's not why I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it because I want to see what shit these teams are in coming into the autumn internationals, because this could be one of the most monumental shifts in English rugby if New Zealand look class, if Australia look class, and if South Africa put up a good fight. Because the next games I've all got are England.
Yep.
And I think England is an absolute pasting. Fingers crossed.
Right. You're quite invested in that.
Yeah, I'm very invested. Very invested.
Well, one man who won't be part of that now is Paul Gustard, because he is with Quins.
Sounds like a game changer.
And Quins, I don't know if they've played yet, or whether it's this weekend or whether it was last night. I think it's this weekend sometime. They play against Jersey Reds in a pre-season game. And Paul Gustard has named his starting 15 and his 8, not replacements, not finishers.
Oh, impact men.
Game changers. This is a new bit of rugby vernacular. Game changers.
Oh, yeah, fine. Why not? Why not? It's better than substitutes, alternates, backups.
Yeah. Riding pine.
Pine riders. I like it, I like it. I mean, you know, these things do have an effect on a player. I was playing a cup final at Sedgley Park, expanded bench, so we had the full complement because it's a national, you know, national cup competitions do have expanded benches.
Yeah.
When the coach went through the substitutes, he didn't referred to me as replacement back row. He referred to me as the second replacement back row.
The second replacement.
Do you reckon? I'm thinking, because I studied sport, like psychology, and as it in sport, and worked with bobsleighers and badminton people and stuff. But I'm assuming there's some sort of psychological basis for Paul Gustard doing this and Eddie Jones doing this.
So,
because it feels on the face of it a little bit, I mean, we've already mentioned some social justice warrior types. It feels a little bit like that, where you're going, oh no, there's no losers.
No,
just because you're not in the starting 15, it's like you still get your
I have a better
still get your participation certificate. Yeah. You're a game changer.
That's so for me. I think it's with the best intentions. It's trying to give those on the bench a motivational boost. It actually comes across as
patronizing.
Yeah, 100%. Well, it'll have the opposite effect.
I've got a better analogy for you. During the space program, when they first set up the space program, obviously they wanted like the top fast jet pilots to go into space. And they had a small problem, which is they need two of these guys to get into space. Only one of them can be the pilot. The other one's got to be the co-pilot. Well, you know, good luck, deciding which of Iceman and Maverick is going to be the pilot, right? So the co-pilot, they renamed as Captain.
Yeah.
So you had the captain, the mission leader, and then the pilot.
So I thought you were going to refer to another story, which is when, I think in the 60s, when NASA were working the space race against Russia and working to get in to the moon, the president at the time walked around Houston or Cape Canaveral or wherever it was and spoke to a janitor who was sweeping the floors and said, "So what's your role here?" And the janitor replied, "Sir, I'm helping to put a man on the moon."
There you go.
So it's everyone, it's the contribution of everyone towards the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and from a very practical sports point of view, and rugby league do this better than rugby union, it's managing your squad. Not so much so you have the best players at the start, because I think everyone assumes you want the best players at the start. You want the best players at the end, personally. So if you look at where the points are scored, most points are scored towards the end of a game. So in rugby league, because they've got interchanges, they can afford to start their best players, bring them off in the middle, and then bring them back on at the end to make sure you've got your best players ending rather than the best players starting. And I think there's a lot of good science behind that. But it's about getting these massive egos, because particularly in rugby, because we don't have interchanges, well, in rugby union, right? There is a sort of stigma about being on the bench. And nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, particularly, I think front rows get it now, don't they? Front rows need to come on strong. So it doesn't matter if you're on the bench or you're starting and you're going to take.
And but you're going to play kind of 45 minutes, 35 minutes, or 50, 30 minutes. But
that drive to want to be in the starting 15, than the bench, or on the bench rather than excluded from the match day squad, that competition drives performance through the week training. So I don't. It's all. This is professional competitive sport. I understand. I think it's trying to give a psychological edge. It's things like Paul Gustave was the guy who had called the Saracens defence the Wolf Pack to start with, and it's trying to bring about a mentality. And I understand that from a psychological perspective. I agree with Phil. There's something a little bit cringe about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say is, why is it not accepted in the sport that you can specialise to be a 40-minute monster and optimise your body and your training to be that 40-minute monster, rather than, you know, 80 minutes? And, you know, it might be a significantly different type of athlete. And also, why can't you compete for that actual role? I mean, you know, if you don't get that role, it's just as devastating as not getting a starting gig. I think they're slightly different things.
Like in NFL, you have some dual threat quarterbacks who are just there for the red zone.
Exactly.
When you get 10 metres out from the end zone, they bring on their...
I mean, personally,
they bring on their running quarterback.
This is not a very fashionable opinion, but I have plenty of them. which is, I think we should have interchanges in rugby because of all the injuries, and I'm sure it'll lead to more injuries, but at least we'll have 15 fit players.
It'll lead to bigger players.
Exactly, but what do I want to see? Yeah. You know, I don't really care. I want bigger players, more entertainment.
I think there's an argument for a juiced Olympics, just as some of them are having drugs and others aren't, and people from richer countries are able to get the masking agents, just let them take whatever they want, and we get to see the fastest times and the biggest throws and the
I always go back to, what does a 15-year-old boy want to watch? that's what I go back. Bigger players, harder hits, so on and so forth.
Right.
Oh, sorry. Or what do 50-year-old whining journalists want to see? same sort of thing.
Sanctimonious whining,
bitter old boy club style journalists. What do they want to see? Because that's what's important, isn't it? What do the journalists at the Telegraph want to see?
There's not been a great deal of all that sort of stuff this week, has there?
The headlines. I spoke to a guy at the RFU who gave me a little insight into what these journalists are like when they get together as a pack. And it was quite amusing. There was a work experience individual with them who'd done, you know, media work with football and various sports. And she came away from this experience going, "They're just not nice people, are they?" Like, no, they're not. So, little insight to the world of rugby journalism.
They're very, what I would say, having been in lots and lots of media rooms, and I'll have to say we, because I'm part of that group.
Yeah, but do you know what
we're a very homogenous group of people. Very, very similar people, in whatever way you want to look at it, in outlook, in...
That is completely wrong. That is completely wrong. I'll tell you why it's wrong, okay? So my experience with them so far is they show up to games with an attitude, but they don't dress to match their attitude. What I mean is I've never seen a more dishevelled, scruffy bunch of individuals in my life. I mean, you're at work, and yeah, like the lack of, you know, the lack of pride that they take in just their basic appearance. I would never go to work looking like they do.
There's a lot of bootcut jeans in a rugby media room.
Oh, yeah. It's just horrendous. I mean, I'm like, who let the vagrants in?
Right, who threw a scarecrow through a charity shop?
Yeah. Yeah, who covered this man in glue, dragged him through age concern, gave him a notepad, and then brought him here?
To speak to some of the people, the highest paid and best people in the world of rugby.
Yeah, I mean, if you got, right, a head of security from the banking world and then employed him at a rugby club, he would look at these guys, take one, right, out, and out. I don't know who was. I mean, and this goes across. This goes across the board.
Corner. Yeah,
yeah. They are so scruffy. It's, and then now here's the weird bit. This is the bit I really don't get. Okay, it's when everything's going on. Are they? I mean, they watch the game when the game's happening, but before the game and after the game, they literally turn in and just look at each other and have these little insular chats. And I think, like, isn't your job now surely to wander around, get an idea for the atmosphere, see if you can pick up some? No. Of course it's not, because they're so comfortable in their position, they feel they have to do no work. When we went to when we went to Philadelphia, it was quite funny because you're surrounded by these mega athletes. And I'm like, if I can get some inside information now, well, now would be the time. Go and have a chat, buy him a drink. There were journalists there, and they looked like it was a school disco. Like, they were afraid in the school disco, in their bootcut jeans, all looking in. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I'm amazed that they have jobs, actually. It's just that they can spell and proofread.
There's a lot of nice guys. There's a lot of good guys.
Yeah, great.
There's a lot of really...
Do you know what?
Guys.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're
I think I'm looking at, like, a select few. But
and I can understand if you were, I guess, being in a position where I might have existing relationships or know these people, that there isn't that that need to introduce yourself. I think it's always worth remembering, just whatever situation in life.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're in actually being... open and almost welcoming to new faces that's a huge thing just for life.
That is 100% yes. what they are not good at.
Yeah,
I will concede. Yeah, I'll go with that. It can feel a bit of an impregnable homogenous group.
Unless you have a podcast, in which case you can do what you want.
Well, yeah, so, that's the beauty of it, as we just have done. And I think you put the world to rights there, JB.
The esoteric world of rugby journalism you've put to rights.
As for domestic rugby, we're going to preview two more sides from the Gallagher Premiership. We're also going to be, because we have been asked what we did in regards to Pro 14, well, we're going to have a couple of weekends before the season starts where we are going to look at the nations, the clubs of the nations involved in the Pro 14, so don't worry about that. Well, we'll probably swerve Italy. JB might give us a bit of an insight.
Benetton are building Benetton nicely. They were playing last night, actually.
They lost to Worcester, didn't they?
Yeah, close though.
They were very close.
So pre-season rugby is beginning, and as I say, Harlequins play Jersey Reds, or they did play last night, I think it was. There was, but a lot of the Premiership sides have started playing their games. JB sat and watched two whole Sale Sharks.
I was going to say, I've got an in-depth preview of Doncaster, if anyone's interested. So, look, Doncaster have got one guy who sort of stood out to me. I mean, Doncaster played very, very well, I thought, considering, like, you know, the money gap and everything else between the two teams. There was a scrum half, and I don't know if you necessarily want this in your scrum half, but a phenomenally powerful individual. I mean, he had three Premiership players hanging off him, and he's still churning his legs. I don't know what his name is, but very, very, very impressive.
I'm always impressed, and I'm glad that this summer, partly because of the salary cap, as we talked about, means people need to balance their squad. Premiership clubs have been coming in and plucking more players out of the Championship, it feels like, than
they
normally
do. Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah.
And you get a lot of talented guys in the Championship, especially front five.
Well, was it you that made the point last week when I was slagging off Leicester's hookers or whatever it is? Like, look at Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just showed up, and that's a really good point. You know, you just give these guys a chance and you don't know what they're going
to
do.
Rotherham to Wasps, and he was a standout player for Wasps last season, yeah.
Yeah, after not making it at Sale, then going to Mac.
He's not a big lad, though, you know.
He's not
like,
a big lad.
I've had him in the dungeon.
I know.
And he's not... was he here for that?
I think you had him in the dungeon, then he joined in on our podcast for the first 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. Like, you wouldn't say, oh, yeah, definitely a Premiership hooker. Like, Rob Webber, you would say, definitely a Premiership hooker.
Yeah, because he's an enormous
bloke. He's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I watched Sale Sharks last night, played Doncaster. I also watched Sale Jets. Quite amazingly, and this is genuinely amazing, this isn't just me saying, oh, look, it's Sale, it's amazing, right? They've got a full camera setup and production studio from Salford Uni putting out this game on both Facebook Live, YouTube, and I think Periscope at the same time, which for a pre-season game is bloody amazing.
That is amazing. It's quite a good relationship to have.
Yeah.
Because all those individuals at Salford Uni, it's a great thing to have on their CV for their experience.
Yeah, it's really good that what they've got, like... big television shows get made at the Salford Uni studios.
Well, it's Media City, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think Sale are going to struggle from a media point of view, as in, like, it's going to be the same old problems. Like, it's going to be a bit of cloak and dagger around signings and all that. Right? But I tell you what, the content that they're producing and, you know, the willingness to get, Sale exposure to the wider public, I think they're going to be an absolute top organisation for that this year.
Well, I'll tell you what pre-season rugby is good for. It is doing a bit of fantasy rugby draft research.
Yes. Here we go.
So, yeah, as you've been hearing us talking about fantasy rugby draft, we're going to continue this because we absolutely love it. The rankings of players are available now. So, again, just to recap, it is a different way of doing fantasy rugby. If you've done draft-style rugby, fantasy sports, rugby, football, whatever, then you'll understand and you'll know how different and brilliant it is. If you haven't, then it's a revolution in how you do it. They've been doing it in America forever with the NFL. It's, fortunately, with fantasy rugby draft, it's making its way over to the UK, and it's brilliant. And the rankings for the players for the Gallagher Premiership are out.
Uh-oh.
And the top-ranked side in the Gallagher Premiership, according to fantasy rugby draft, and I imagine it would be drafted number one in most leagues, is the Saracens front row.
They should be drafted number one in most leagues.
Hmm.
And it's interesting, two Sale players make the top four.
Yeah, they do. Although, I tell you now, there's another Sale player who will not be in the top four or even the top 50. That's someone that I will be picking up this year.
Any hints you want to give?
Absolutely none. You two can carry this segment.
I would have thought you'd just have all Sale players.
I mean, they are going to be the best team with ball in hand. There's no two ways about that. Meters out. I tell you what, not one I'm going to pick up, but a guy who I think is going to do really well in fantasy this year, Marland Yard.
Yardy, he was very good last year
because he doesn't give the ball away. As in, like, he doesn't pass it. Not in a good way. Not like the running back doesn't drop the ball in almost like a bad way. The winger doesn't pass, and he just carries on churning his legs. He'll break a lot of tackles, even when he should have given the ball. Really.
Well, Marland Yard is number four.
Who is he?
AJ McGinty's ranked two. Yep. Ollie Woodburn is ranked number three. That's been one of Phil's pickups the last couple of seasons.
Yep. Yeah, last year he did very well for me.
Owen Farrell, ranked number five. Now,
rubbish.
He
Nonsense.
Hardly played. He had about 400 minutes of game time in the Premiership.
Were they the
last
best 400 minutes?
Well, he always gets one of the best. This is one of the things you have to consider when you're drafting your side is Owen Farrell will get one of the most points per game average.
Points per minute.
Points per minute average. but he will not play that many games. And here's an interesting one. Alex Lazowski his position has been changed from fly half to midfielder.
That's outrageous.
That's huge.
That is very, very good.
That is huge.
Yeah, because hang on, is that good?
That means you could have
him and
Farrell if they're both playing. You could pick, or you could have Lazowski and AJ McGinty potentially in your side.
Ooh, this is getting a little bit too insular rugby draft, but I like it. That is quite exciting. I don't agree with it, by the way.
So I can tell you that Owen Farrell scored 0.31 points per minute of game time last year. So if you go on there and you get Manager Pro, you get access to these stats. There was only of players that played a significant amount of time.
So Manager Pro, is that when you're getting the majority of your household income from playing fancy rugby? Is that how you qualify for Manager Pro?
Something like that, yeah. So let's have a look at... So there is only one player who played more than 200 minutes last year who scored more points per minute than Owen Farrell. So he's second highest. He played half as many minutes as some people. But one player who scored more points per minute, and that was above 800. Above 200 minutes.
It must be Saracens front row then.
No, because they play every minute of every single game.
Oh yeah, of course. We
have already mentioned
AJ then.
AJ.
Yes, love AJ.
He's the only man.
And also, what a nice man as well. What a nice guy.
When I look at it, I had a shocker last year. I could have done so much better. I drafted AJ McGinty and I drafted Jason Woodward and I let them both go.
Ooh, Jason Woodward is...
ranked number
eight. Of those who scored more than... those who played more than 200 minutes, he is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th.
Right.
In terms of points per minute.
Jamie's getting bored.
I'm getting bored now.
Are you getting bored with this?
I'm getting bored of you reading numbers.
This is statistics.
Do it over a coffee.
This is valuable insight.
I want to talk about Newcastle.
Okay, let's get on to that. Because it is Newcastle, isn't it? Newcastle and Wasps are our two teams to preview this week.
Just to combine the two, Newcastle's highest ranked fantasy rugby draft players, just to give an insight as to... is Sinotti, ranked number 20. Mm-hmm. Their front row, ranked number 26... and Veroniki Gonova, ranked number 27.
And I can tell you that Sinotti, Gonova, and Toby Flood were their top scorers per minute played.
So we know where their strength is. Let's take a look at Newcastle as we look ahead to the new season. Finished in fourth position, an outstanding effort.
Yes.
And I don't want to take away from that at all, but I can't help but thinking as I look at this season ahead that they capitalised on several other clubs massively underperforming as well as improving their own level of performance.
Yeah. Do you think there's a surprise element about Newcastle? Because a lot of teams would go up to Newcastle or host them and think, that's a win. So do you know when you do your goal setting, go, lose Saracens away, lose Exeter away, or Newcastle at home, W there. Do you reckon that they just did not expect what was coming?
I think if you ask any players, they'll say...
Every
week as it comes.
There's no easy games.
We're not counting our chickens, all the rest of it.
But it's weird, isn't it? Because they do say that, but they would openly say, yeah, but we did think we'd lose against Saracens.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll say when they think they're going to lose, but they'll never say when they think they're going to win.
See, I think there's probably an element early in the season of that. I think as the season went on and you saw their good performances and their exciting attacking back line and their rock solid pack, that nuggety pack, I think it would have turned round, but that didn't stop them still rolling over a lot of good teams.
I think also Dave Walder's systems are quite interesting too. I mean, they tend to use a lot of big boys down the same channel, which is very, very hard to stop, particularly in the backs, because they do have some size now. I mean, not just the power of the wings, but also Matavesi adds a lot of heft. The Scottish centre, which is still feels
Harris
is also a big old boy.
Well, he's rangy, isn't he? Mm.
They've got to add a little bit of a different dynamic in that outside centre channel. They've brought in Johnny Williams from London Irish.
So he's so let's go through their signings and their players out. So they brought in Guy Graham, Gary Graham's brother. They brought in
England
Tom,
straight away.
They brought in Tom Arscott, who spent a year in France after his
rehabilitating
banishment.
So is he able to keep secrets now, or is, you know,
well, it's just if he's not playing against his brother, it doesn't matter.
What do you reckon his interview process was? Do you reckon that they told him, "Look, Tom, we think you've got the job, okay? There's a few things here in the, here in this playbook. Go and read it." And then when he went out, do you reckon that they tried to ambush him with, what's in the playbook, Tom? What's
yeah,
the playbook?
They send someone else.
Yeah, and then if he keeps quiet, he gets the job.
Yeah, it's a 2-week interview process, mostly waiting to see if any of those secrets turn up in mainstream media.
Yeah, Newcastle have got operatives in cars outside and approaching him in coffee shops.
Well, and he looks like a squad player.
Yes, completely agree.
Like when he was at Sale, they found him very valuable because he's a good kicking option. So if you need someone else to do that sort of lifting, he's exactly the guy. And I think he's left footed too.
Yeah, no, I get it, but he's a squad player.
He's strong. That's the other thing.
Yeah,
all those are true. He is a squad player. But they've struggled with backup for Hammersley at 15, and he does give a good option there.
Yeah.
So the other they've brought in Mullipola and George McGuigan, which is Leicester's loss, Newcastle's gain. Mm-hmm. Those are the two very strong, very good options for front row, which will strengthen. Because they lost a couple of players from the front row who've retired. They brought in Johnny Williams, who you mentioned, who is young, very talented English centre from London Irish. Nagusa, the Fijian back row.
Yeah, he's Fijian back row, isn't he? He'll probably compete for that number 8 job.
Yeah. I think he can play right across the back row.
Yeah, he can.
So they lose Nili Latu, who can play kind of 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
Where's Nili Latu on? Retired?
No, Japan. He is a 34, 35, but he's going.
But
a year or two
Nagusa in Japan. Has been playing for starting for Fiji in recent internationals. So yeah,
they brought in Connor Collette from North Harbour, someone I don't know, and then this Portuguese
Betancourt
outside back. Yeah, Betancourt.
Really, very good.
Sevens, and he's been playing in Pro Dida in France.
So
that's the ins.
Okay.
On the outs, I'll skip through a few of these, but some of the big names. Probably the biggest loss to them will be Cicino.
Yeah, 100%.
Juan Pablo, who's gone to Edinburgh. They have got Matavesi.
And they were starting him more than...
Yeah, it's one of
for the last couple of seasons, he's been such a useful player. Because he's an all-round game. He can do the hard stuff, and he can do the more delicate distribution.
I actually think that's quite a good loss in some ways. Not because he's a bad player. It shows the team's moved on from there. I think that the replacements they've got for him are marginally better, but he's a very, very, very good player. I think it also tells you a little bit about like salary caps, and you can't just stack players in certain positions unless you need them.
I think they will miss him. I would start him ahead of Matavesi.
Would you?
Yeah, I would do. They've also lost Mamoz, who
did nothing,
got brought in but didn't really play. He couldn't,
was injured.
Couldn't force his way in when he came back. Yeah, so, I drafted him in F. I brought him in FRD after he came back.
Oh, has he gone to Toulouse?
To Toulouse, yeah.
Bloody hell.
So they've lost the younger Aguja, the Argentine outside back, which is no great loss.
Oh, well.
DTH left last year, back to Glasgow. Vickers and Scott Lawson, Rob Vickers and Scott Lawson, in the front row of retired, which they actually did quite a lot of hard yards last few years. Ali Hogg's retired. Nili Latu's gone to Japan. Evan Olmsted has gone to New Zealand to play in the Mitre Cup. And there's a few other lesser names who've gone.
Well, I think lesser names is everything about Newcastle. They've got some players that really stood out last year. Their locks, Callum Green, Robinson and Whitty, were, you know, none of those were big names at all, and they really, really were tough lads.
Yeah.
And then their back row, Welsh and Wilson, they just epitomise what Newcastle are about.
Welsh, Wilson, Gary Graham, Callum Sheik, Chick. The four of those really do. They're very good Young or youngish.
Of those names, right, who they've signed, how many of them from the northeast?
Well, oh. McGuigan's gone back there.
McGuigan is one I was thinking of.
They've got a lot. They've got some young players coming through, like Kibirigi in the back line and Radwan and
yeah, love that name, Radwan.
Radwan, he is rapid as well.
And there's a number eight as well who there's a back row player.
But what of the guys that they've signed? Are many of them?
Only McGuigan.
Only McGuigan.
So the reason I say that is because I saw quite an interesting interview with, I think it was their chief exec. I think it was. I can't remember. And he was saying that they think they can get a hometown premium, i.e. bringing lads back for a little bit less money and strengthening the squad that way.
Well, totally. And that's a massive part of their identity. And it's been a huge part of lots of clubs' identities. I think you'd say that about Exeter for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You used to say that more so about Bath, but you still do a little bit. Sale, you used to say it about. They've got a lot of young players, but actually that's where it's going to be interesting
well,
there. Because Sale's dynamic is changing. They're getting a lot more foreign players
I think there's direct comparisons to be drawn between Sale and Newcastle.
Yeah.
In terms of, they make a lot of noises about bringing through young players, which is great, but you've got to actually do it. And I think when it comes to the crunch and you're on the verge of a new season, you'd rather bring in, you know, name the foreign player or name the player from outside the Premiership, then you would, you know, and Sale have got, you know, talent in that academy coming out their ears. And they will bring some through, as will Newcastle. But I think when it really comes to it, when they want starters, they would rather buy them in.
Now, Newcastle seem to have done that very, very effectively in cherry-picking specific people, and this summer Mulopola is probably the big one.
I also wonder, is it a case of they want to do that, you know, get the lads from the northeast? They did it successfully, but eventually you just run out of lads that you can pick up from the northeast once you've signed what's his name, David Wilson, Toby Flood,
you've got at least one tape boy playing there.
Yeah, okay, we've done as much as we possibly can now. There are no more people from the northeast that we can find.
So I think that they will probably maintain their level of performance from where they are. I just feel that as a consequence of other people, surely that many other teams can't be as bad as they were last year. They will not repeat their feat.
So I
think they'll be 6-7.
I agree. I think they do agree.
I think they won't drop. Their performance won't drop, but their relative performance, if, as we were saying last week, you've got teams like Leicester, Bath, Quins, Northampton, Gloucester, Sale, that kind of, the teams that were lower mid-table last year, if two or three of those step up to where they potentially could be, Newcastle will drop down in a relative performance.
So there is one element of danger about Newcastle. I don't know how much to read into this, but it is undoubtedly true because I've had it confirmed by multiple sources. But they are failing to pay agency fees, which I think is bizarre. So bringing in all these players, but they haven't paid an agency fee for something like 2 years, allegedly.
Mate, you need to be careful about saying stuff like that. You're just saying it's on... Well, you've heard that, it from that, multiple that, sources.
That's from agents. And the other thing...
Well, when you're saying they're not paying agency fee or agents' fees, do you mean there are agents who are owed money, or do you mean that they are just not... They're picking up players through contact rather than agents?
They are... So, I'll give you an example of one deal where they said, hey, get us this player and we'll pay you the fees that we owe you for this player and for the previous player. So that's an actual case. And the other one is image rights.
So when you say it's an actual case, is it an actual case? Because are they taking them to court?
No. As in, it's not a court case. It's an actual example. I would tell you the players.
I know. They had a winding up threat in January. That was over an unpaid tax bill. That was last season. That was like December, January last year. I think it was £100,000 was outstanding. That was an HMRC one.
Yeah.
And they paid the balance a few hours after the winding up petition was put
there
in.
All I'm saying is there are certain red lights. One is agency fees. That is obviously one I was going to refer to. And the other one is image rights. They don't seem to be that keen on paying them. So just some warning lights there on, you know, how sustainable this whole lot is.
Newcastle Rugby Limited recorded losses of £2.651 million in their last set of accounts published in June 2016.
Which is not... That's not unusual for a Premiership club.
It was described as satisfactory in light of current conditions, and they said they were optimistic about the long-term prospects for the continued growth on and off the pitch.
Well, there you go.
They increased their turnover by 17%.
Although it would be devastating, wouldn't it, if their statement was, we don't see any prospect for long-term growth. Here, you know, here's a load of new signings.
Usual stuff. We've probably talked to all the players. We've probably already named the players. But if you had to give one pick for fantasy rugby, all things considered from Newcastle, who would it be?
For me, it'd be Toby Flood. He was injured a lot of last season, and as a result, did not prove valuable. But he'll get the if he's fit, and he seems to be fit and well and shaking off the injuries he had last year. Assuming he starts the majority of games, he'll be the main man.
Here's something. Here's a random flyer. But how about the new back row that they've got? Nilly Lawsey did a lot of carrying. You need to get yards from your back row. This guy sounds like not to stereotype. He sounds like he can run and sounds like he can offload. So that will do for me.
Nagusa
is not a bad shout, you know, and he'll probably go late-ish in the draft as well.
Mm.
Gonover and Sonotti are
the obvious, aren't they? Too obvious.
They are almost too obvious because they will go relatively early. Another one would be Takalua, who's a scrum half.
Well, he was more valuable when he used to kick sticks.
Yes, true. But he's also quite exciting as a runner as well.
Mm, yeah, he is.
Right.
I wouldn't bother with scrum halves unless you get Dan Robson or
Will Cliff
or Huhard. That was it. I wouldn't bother with.
Whoa! What about Faf?
Well, he's not going to be there for half the season.
Will Cliff will, though. Just saying.
Will Cliff.
No. mock me at your peril.
0.1 points per game.
Will Cliff is a man.
Okay. You did make this point very vehemently last season before Faf signed.
Well, the thing is, it's not that Will Cliff played poorly. He didn't. He's a great player. A Hall of Fame type player.
He's not
right?
an FR. He's not a fantasy rugby draft points
but
machine.
But with Faf not
very
there.
Very few scrum halves are.
With Faf not there. Just saying.
Interesting. Let's see if you draft him.
Yeah, let's see if I do.
Next club in the spotlight then. So we're all saying that Newcastle are going to probably definitely drop out of top four, possibly drop out of top six.
Yeah.
Sixth or seventh, unfortunately.
I think seventh.
And that's no loss in performance from themselves.
No, agreed.
Wasps.
Here we go. Well, financial irregularity, JB.
Here we go.
What do you want to say?
Well, how can I... I've got lots to say about this. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, but I've got lots to say about it. Let's start with the playing side. We'll move to the financials later. That's probably a better
good,
way to do it.
Yeah. That is definitely where we want to focus.
I think they're going to be a lot weaker than last year, is basically it.
So what's that based on?
This is based on... primarily the loss of Danny Cipriani. I spoke about this Sippers. Before, but I actually think they are so reliant on him to do great things that without him, you know, they're going to be, they're going to really struggle. And also, you know, the old Ben Darwin thing, fly halves take 3 years to, you know, get used to a system. Well, Sepulwenga coming in, he's not going to spark instantly. On top of that, they've lost two back rowers. Haskell, I think, is probably a good one to lose, because he commands such a huge wage. But he's definitely a leader, and he's definitely the heartbeat of that Wasps team. Well, not always on a match day, but certainly round the park, round training, round the facility, a great player to have. And the other one is Guy Mercer.
Thompson.
Sorry, why do I keep calling him Guy Mercer? because there is a Guy Mercer. Guy Thompson, right, who is really useful for Wasps to have about, because he can come on, he can carry the ball, and back rows of successful carriers are very, very hard to find, and he is one.
See, I think Wasps are overall, I mean, the Sopawanga thing is going to be critical.
Yeah.
Overall, I think they're in a better position than they were last year. Because the back row is the strongest back row in the Premiership now, potentially.
Go on.
Nizam Carr's come in.
Okay.
You've got two outstanding number eights, Nathan Hughes and Nizam Carr.
Mm.
You've got Brad Shields, which is a huge upgrade on James Haskell.
Disagree.
Well, it was an upgrade on Haskell.
No, until he does something, right?
Potentially.
Yeah. Until he does something like win Super Rugby.
Yeah, but that's Super Rugby. I mean, we saw him in an England shirt at second row. Not for me, thank you. James Haskell is a proven, whatever you want to say about him, he's a proven Premiership player. So for Brad Shields to be an instant upgrade, he's going to have to put in some real miles and performances to do that.
Carr and Shields in, I think, is a net upgrade on your back row. And also when you consider that it was a breakthrough season for Jack Willis, actually a guy like Guy Thompson, albeit Jack Willis is now injured and going to be recovering, and Alex Reader will be coming back, guys like that. So back row is not a concern for
Wasps. Is Alex Reader coming back? I thought Alex Reader...
He had a long-term injury, but...
I thought he'd retired. Have I got that wrong?
No, that's Sam Jones.
So, I know Sam Jones has. Are you sure about Alex Reader?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's listed in their squad.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Sam Jones is definitely out, unfortunately. Because
Alex Reader...
Their back row is a net upgrade, I think. Tommy Taylor missed most of the last season, and he's massive for them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's going to be back and fit along with Tom Cruise.
It was funny when you were asking Tom Cruise about
Tommy Taylor. So you played well, but what about Tommy Taylor?
Yeah, you've been playing quite well, but Tommy Taylor's back now, isn't he?
And he's better than you, right?
Yeah. I didn't do that, did I?
A little bit.
Reading between the
lines. A little bit.
Yeah, you weren't as explicit as that.
No, I'm not. Yeah, my Tommy Taylor love goes back many years. And they've brought in a prop as well, right?
The Georgian prop.
Yes.
Zurab Zavani.
Yes.
Zavania.
And they needed to address their prop situation. So I think their pack's in really good shape. And the back line is... Well, they're going to be without Willie LaRue. And you're right to point out that some players take a little while to adapt
Willie
to
LaRue
the Premiership. And Willie LaRue did.
He's a great example of that.
So if Sopawanga can hit the ground running... I think they're very, very, very well placed to do well.
I think they're going to go backwards. Certainly first half of the season, they're going to be at sixes and sevens. Oh, by the way, do you not think it's weird that they've got no forwards coach?
Hadn't thought about it.
Haven't they got the guy that come in from Nottingham?
Danny Wilson?
No, Costello.
And they got... Oh, maybe they have now, but Danny Wilson came in and then left immediately for Scotland.
Well, maybe he's not forwards coach, actually. Costello maybe came in as defence.
Have they not got Titterall?
Titterall was there. I don't know if he still is. Andy Titterall coached. This is one of my favourite segmentations of coaching ever. The line out, but only in the air.
Is it only in the air or only on the ground?
No. Dai Young coaches line out on the ground. So at some point, there's a transition where Titterall shuts up and Dai Young takes over.
So,
what do you think, Phil?
So I think you're both making some very interesting and valid points. I actually think on paper, I agree with you, Tim. Their squad is stronger than last year. On paper. The point that you make, Jay, about Ben Darwin and how long it takes to bed in, we will see. Because the key one is Sopawanga.
Yeah.
Something that will help him bed in is having Jimmy Gopeth alongside him, who will most likely play 12 for a lot of the season. Can control the game, understand the pattern, can kick, can take pressure off him when he's kicking. So there is a question mark, but I'm probably less worried about it because he's got Gopeth.
Just one thing about Sopawanga, right, is he is a good player because we've seen him Highlanders. We've seen
Highlanders
him at,
and New Zealand.
New Zealand, right?
He is superb.
But don't forget this. Under the Highlanders, you could say he was playing under potentially one of the best attacking coaches in the world in Tony Brown.
And then he's
in the All Blacks. I mean, I'm not saying...
Well, look at the Wasps' back line. If you had to pick...
They're not the All Blacks, are they?
No, but who is at club level? But if you had to...
They're not the Highlanders either.
If you were going to pick back lines to be part of it, if that's where you thrive in world rugby, then Wasps would be in like your top five picks.
Their first choice back line. So Robson, Sopawanga.
Robson, yes.
Robson.
No, you can't include Sopawanga because we're trying to put him in.
Okay. Well, no, he's going in.
So what I'm saying is you've got to put Sopawanga in
Robson, Gopeth.
Gopeth will be 12. The first choice back line that Sopawanga is fitting into.
So he's going to be 10, right?
So he'll be 10. Jimmy Gopeth.
Or Lovabalavu.
Gopeth will be first choice with Elliot Daly outside him.
Wing.
Wade.
No, first choice would be there. Wade and Watson or Bassett with then Willie LaRue at 15.
Yeah, it is quite
that
good.
First choice is exceptional.
And they've brought in another. They've brought in a guy from a New Zealand provincial side as a 15/ winger. Could be a little sleeper for the fantasy rugby draft.
Ambrose Curtis.
Yeah.
Who's a big boy. Look, six foot four.
I don't disagree. Okay, I think. I do disagree. First and foremost,
but you don't disagree. I don't disagree. But you do.
The biggest loss, and I do think we're massively overlooking this, is Cipriani not being there, because you just can't buy his range of passing. You could spend the money on Beauden Barrett. He doesn't have the range of passing of Danny Cipriani, and I think that's going to be the biggest issue that they've got. I mean, he can make things happen which make everyone else around him seem so much better than they are.
So I recognise that. And I think it is a point. I think they've got a very, very good replacement, but it will take time for him to bed in.
Mm. And I think Phil's point of the fact that Gopeth can take a lot of the pressure off is an important one.
So first thing, sleeper, or your bolter and your star man.
Curtis Ambrose, the sleeper. And I wish I hadn't said that now, because that was... I wish I'd have kept that to myself.
For me, after everything I've just said, Sapuanga would be a damn good pickup, because he's not going to go on international anywhere.
That's true. Is he going to kick sticks?
That's the question for me.
Oh, Gopeth. Yeah.
So does that mean Gopeth is still worthy player to have as a fly half in fantasy rugby draft?
It's a question for Gopeth, because is he going to kick sticks? I know he's such a good kicker.
Okay, so what's more important, assuming they both kick? A fly half listed as a midfielder, or a midfielder listed as a fly half?
A fly half listed as a midfielder.
You can have two of them. Or you could have three of them if you got Lazowski and, say,
Slade.
Malinder.
Oh, Malinder, yeah.
Ooh.
And then George Ford. If you got those three on the field at the same time.
Points, Phil.
So my star man is probably Christian Wade.
He's going to play every game.
Pretty much. He won't be missing for England.
Nope.
And my sleeper is actually, bolter, Rob Miller.
Ooh.
So if Willie LaRue is
off. Willie LaRue for Super Rugby and the Autumn Internationals.
If Willie LaRue's not there, Rob Miller's Rugby hardly played, but...
People rate him as well. Right? Inside that camp, they love him.
He's such a good player. He's such a talented player. If he gets game time, he will do things.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Thanks, Phil.
Lots of misinformation going on here.
My draft board.
And Phil's like, yeah, I'm going to...
No, my star man for fantasy rugby draft is Nizam Carr.
Because
he's not involved in international rugby. He was absolutely outstanding in his three, four months.
He was good.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that's basically it then. Are we done? Because if we are done, I just want to mention one more thing.
Yeah, go on.
So,
how do you think Wasps are going to do? I think top four.
Disagree. Outside of top four.
I think third again. Mm. I think they are the best of the rest behind the top two.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to mention this, okay? Moving away from Wasps. You probably all noticed that... I'm trying to think who it was. Philadelphia Eagles played Pittsburgh Steelers this week, and Christian Scotland Williamson not only played for the Steelers at tight end, he also got a catch, which is pretty amazing.
A catch from tight end.
Yeah.
Which really I think
is outstanding, isn't it?
Getting reps in preseason game
in
time.
Preseason, yeah. So I mean, obviously they're going to reduce the squads, and he's got a huge uphill battle to actually win that position, but. Just got to get better and got to carry on training. But it's amazing to think that he's run out now in front of however many thousands in the Pittsburgh Steelers uniform.
Bear in mind, I'm addicted to those Netflix shows where about the high school football, Last Chance U.
Have you watched QB1 yet?
QB1, yeah. I wasn't as... I have watched it, yeah.
Would you recommend it?
Not as much as Last Chance U or whatever. But I love all that. But you see how many hours and the way young men's lives completely revolve around getting to just the next level. For him to have, within a year, transitioned from never having done any American football to being on the field.
Yeah, I mean, people think,
is it's you cannot underestimate how incredible that is.
So he only got four. He only got four reps. He only got one catch. People might say, "Oh, only four reps, only one catch." I mean, it's just massive. It's massive just to get on the field. So yeah, absolutely delighted for him, and I hope he get. I think how it goes is you have the first team out on the first drive, and then it kind of goes down the roster, and then the second game is more for the backups, and then I think the third game is when it's like almost a full dress rehearsal. Although I think they've got five games now, so I don't know how it all works out.
How is Alex Gray doing?
Alex Gray, I have no idea.
Okay,
I do know that. He's at Atlanta, isn't
Atlanta,
he?
Atlanta, yeah.
I do know that the Australian rugby league fella with a long name plays for Philadelphia, and I think he might have played against Christian Scotland Williamson this week. I think. I want to say Mott's. He's a big old boy. That's what I know. He's a big old boy, and that's where my analysis ends.
Great. Oh, I'm going to keep an eye on that as well for the new season. But we'll be back next week, 1 week closer to the season. Tell your mates.
What are we going to do next week? We're going to do London rugby. Norfolk regional rugby.
Yes. Yes.
And some championship. And we'll try and do it on a Sunday so we can actually watch a championship.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely do it.
Doesn't French League start next weekend?
Sorry, two weekends ago, mate.
Paddy Jackson played his first competitive rugby in a year, or pre-season game for Perpignan.
Did he?
Good to see him back.
So, yeah, plenty to talk about next weekend as we look at with the Rugby Championship and stuff. Enjoy your barren rugby weekend and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Cool. You shoot, Tim.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.